Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Welcome back. You are listening to America This Week. I'm Carrie Weber, joined by Father Matt Malone and our editor of America, well, one of the editors at America, Zach Davis. And we are going to be switching gears now to speak with John Jenkins, Father John Jenkins, who is the president of the University of Notre Dame. And he is a philosopher trained in theology, and he has written a piece for us in America about the Land O'Lakes Statement, this sort of seminal document about Catholic university education in the United States, 50 years after its creation. Father John Jenkins, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We're very glad to have you. Now, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the history of this statement. It's been 50 years since it was written. What prompted you to kind of go back and revisit it now?
Well, it was written it's very soon after the end of Vatican II. It was meant to respond to some of those documents, to envision Catholic universities for the future in light of those documents. It was a celebrated document, important document at the time. Since that time, it's become a contested document. I think that its critics have said it's led the Catholic universities down the path toward secularization, toward losing a robust Catholic identity. I thought it was time to look back and just try to understand the document in its own terms, as well as its significance in the history of thinking about Catholic universities.
So what does it actually say?
Well, it says a number of things. Its most quoted statement is a statement about the independence of Catholic universities' need from ecclesiastical and external authorities generally. That has been taken as a sort of declaration of independence from the church. I don't think it's that. I think it's a statement that for universities to function as such, they need appropriate freedom to do that. And what it gives us is a vision of how these institutions will be Catholic, not simply in terms of their trappings, not simply in terms of having mass on campus, but in terms of an intellectual life that's focused on God and things related to God that will form young people with vibrant intellectual life and strong faith.
And is there general agreement, Father John, on that? On what you just said, that you know, do people hold those principles in common? And then, is the controversy at the level of how you live that out?
No, I think as I say about this document, it is widely criticized and rarely read. Usually, people quote that one sentence from the document, and that becomes the basis for interpretation in a large narrative about how Catholic universities are in such bad shape. But and as I say in my article in America, that the document becomes a proxy war for other issues about the church and about the magisterium and about Catholic universities. But really, what I tried to do is just actually look at the document and look at it in light of Catholic University. So a lot of the, to answer your question, Matt, a lot of the conversation, I think, is off the point, at least in respect to this document itself.
And the those gathered to form the document had what I found was sort of like an interesting anecdote. There is an instance they had in mind that involved one of the former editors of America, John Courtney Murray.
Yep.
Could you tell that story a little bit?
Yes, I heard that. So that story is told by Father Ted Hesburgh, who was the president of Notre Dame. He convened the group as the head of the International Federation of Catholic Colleges and Universities. The idea was that these local kind of chapters or gatherings would produce documents that would eventually turn into an international statement, and he convened the group. I heard this story. He's had it in writing, but I heard it personally from him many times that, yes, in 1954, John Courtney Murray, as you know, is a celebrated theologian, influential in Vatican II, was under some suspicion from some in the Holy Office in the Vatican that his views about the compatibility of Catholicism and freedom of religion in civil society were not in line with Catholic teaching. And it was a complicated story, but he had written an article for a collection that was published by Notre Dame Press, and there was a back-channel message to Father Hesburgh as president of Notre Dame to suppress that publication and Murray's article. Father Hesburgh refused to do so. He said he'd resign if he were forced to do so. There was a lot of back and forth, and in the end, the resolution was, look, they wouldn't print any more copies of that book when they sold out. Eventually, I think Father Murray was told to buy all the remaining copies to remove that article from circulation. But the interesting thing is he, as I'm sure you know, he became one of the most influential figures in the formulation of some very key documents of the Second Vatican Council.
And when you're writing about that episode, John, you say, were a university to submit to such an intrusion, meaning the intervention by the higher authorities, ecclesial authorities, were a university to submit to such an intrusion, however orthodox it may be, it would cease to be a university in the full sense. And it seems to me that that's kind of where the rubber meets the road, right there in that word intrusion, right? So there's an essential relationship between the university and the church, but at the same time, they're distinct. And you know, so how you describe the relationship between the two says a lot about one's ecclesiology and understanding of education and so forth.
A bit. And it says about, I think that's right, Matt, and it says also about how you understand the point of a university. Really, you know, universities, their central activity is inquiry, debate, discussion. You know, there are a lot of crazy views. We all know, we've been around universities, a lot of crazy views are proposed and we may object to them, but it's essential that they stand or fall on the debate around them, the reasons given for and against, and that debate has to be open and it has to be free. That's the whole point of academic freedom. That it's to open up that debate. Once that's compromised, even if it's limited, once that's compromised, the confidence in the integrity of the institution, I think, is in question. And I think that was the driving concern of these signers of this document. I think they were saying to the church, if you want us to contribute as a university, as a Catholic university, we have to be a university and we have to respect the activity of a university. To the extent we fail to do that, we fail as a university and we fail in our service to the church.
Right, and you're talking about you know, the signers desired not to have this intrusion, but they weren't looking for universities free of conversation or about theology or about the church or about God. You write that they wanted to have this constant discussion in which theology confronts all the rest of modern culture and all areas of intellectual study in which it includes. So they were really seeking a much deeper look into what the church believes and how that affects the way people live.
No, I absolutely, Carrie. And in fact, as I make the point in the document itself, there's that statement about the freedom from intrusion. But then just a couple sentences later, there's the statement that in a Catholic institution, Catholicism must be perceptibly present and effectively operative. And their idea was, look, we have at the center of a Catholic university is a theology department who's focused on God, known through natural reason, but also through revelation, and the questions about God engage other disciplines. So you have an institution where that discussion around the relationship of things to God and the implications of theology for the other sciences and the sciences for theology is robust. And so I think they envision a kind of very dynamic debate that doesn't marginalize faith, but in fact makes it central to the discussion of the institution.
Now, in August of 1990, the same month, actually, that the Land O'Lakes statement was released. The same month of the year, not the same year. But in August 1990, the church promulgated Ex Corde Ecclesiae, which was an apostolic constitution given under the authority of Pope John Paul II regarding Catholic colleges and universities and what it means to be a Catholic college and a Catholic university. And a lot of people say that that was in some way a response to the Land O'Lakes statement. How do you understand the relationship between those two?
Yeah, it's a great point. I think you could read many lines from that really important document, Ex Corde Ecclesiae, and they really echo what is found in Land O'Lakes. Lines about academic freedom, lines about the importance of free inquiry, about how that serves the church. I mean, really, you see a continuity there. But one critical issue, and this I do say is a sort of limitation of Land O'Lakes, is what is the relationship of this institution to the church, particularly to its magisterial role, to its hierarchy? That is conspicuously absent from, or that is not developed in the Land O'Lakes document, and it's kind of addressed in Ex Corde as a communio, as a sort of a dialogue between the institution and the bishops that is based on a common purpose, a common commitment. It's not precisely defined, but it's certainly rightly says that part of what a Catholic university must be is in relationship with the church and in a communio, in a common purpose to serve the church in the world.
Why do you think that that was an underdeveloped element of Land O'Lakes, the orientation of the university to the magisterium?
I think two points I'd make, one negative, one positive. The negative point was, I think that the situation with John Courtney Murray and Father Hesburgh was in their minds, and what they wanted to say is, like, we need the appropriate independence, and that's the point they wanted to make. So they didn't make the balancing point. I think the second one, in 1967, these institutions were so deeply connected with either religious communities, in the case of the Jesuit institutions in Notre Dame, Holy Cross Institution, and Catholic U, which had bishops on its board, that there was such a intimate relationship as it was. Perhaps they thought, well, it wasn't necessary to articulate that further. So that's speculative on my part, but I think that's part of it. So I'd say I think both of those contributed to perhaps that, well, I'd call it a blind spot in the document.
And how does that relationship change today, where, you know, in a lot of Catholic universities you have lay presidents, lay board of directors that aren't necessarily connected to some of the institutional church in the way that it was in the past?
Yes, and that is something that really we have to work through and talk about. I think, and I mean, it must be said that lay leaders of Catholic institutions are among most committed Catholics and committed to the church. So the fact that they're lay isn't itself a problem, but there must be some mutual understanding of the appropriate relationship and the appropriate dialogue about issues and the ways in which bishops have a responsibility to the universities and universities have a responsibility to the bishops and the church.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're speaking with Father John Jenkins, who is the president of the University of Notre Dame, about his article, The Document That Changed Catholic Education Forever, which you can find at americamagazine.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Father Jenkins.
Now, back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. I am Kerry Weber, here with Father Matt Malone and Zach Davis, and we are speaking with Father John Jenkins, who is the president of the University of Notre Dame, and we are talking about an article he has written for America Media, and it is about the Land O'Lakes statement, a statement that changed the way Catholic universities were looked at in terms of their relationship to the church. And this statement has a long legacy. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit, Father Jenkins, about the ways in which we talk about what makes a Catholic university today and how that could be that conversation could sort of be better formed by this document, or if there's a need for a new kind of document. There seems to be a lot of conversation and desire by some people to really find, to come up with sort of a rubric, a list of things that make a university Catholic or not, which sometimes seems to be sort of counter to the idea of several of the ideas that are described in the document and in the general understanding of what a Catholic university is.
Yeah. I'm going to answer that in a slightly roundabout way, but I think we should remind ourselves universities were created in a thoroughly Catholic culture. There weren't universities in as we would recognize them before the 13th century, when in Paris and Bologna, Oxford and Cambridge, these institutions arose. And that is the point of the title of the Pope's statement, Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, from the heart of the church. Well, that you could think, oh, that's just a historical accident. But I really believe that the whole impetus for a community dedicated to the pursuit of truth and learning arises from the faith, a belief that God created the world, that gave us minds to understand the world. And universities arose in human history from that understanding. Now, most prominent universities are secular in some ways and have set aside that religious commitment. But I think it's the witness of institutions committed to faith, committed to learning, committed to open discussion is extremely important. And Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, the Pope's document, makes that very clear. And so it's important to have these institutions. Now, that said, different institutions around the world, around this nation, contribute in very different ways. I've been in the third world, you know, in Africa, in India, and there are Catholic institutions that do remarkable work at educating young people, and we should feel very proud of them. I mean, the Catholic reputation throughout the world is so strong in education, and we should continue that because it's part of the faith. And so, okay, but now let me get to your question. Okay, what makes a university Catholic? Well, I think a checklist approach is wrong, but I think there are many aspects to an institution that reflect this Catholic commitment, certainly a kind of belief in the intelligibility of the world and the pursuit of truth and the goodness in pursuing truth. The education and formation of young people is critical. I think there's a moral component and certainly a faith component. I mean, unless there's sort of dialogue about faith and respect for faith, I mean, what's the point of calling institution a Catholic university? Now, within all those various components, I think, you know, there's a lot of room for diversity, and that's okay. But I think the main thing is, sense of faith, sense of a full humanistic formation of students, confidence in the pursuit of truth that grows from faith, and a witness to the world in engaging in the process of inquiry and education.
And John, you know, I bet you get this question a lot because, I mean, the University of Notre Dame is one of the great universities in the world, and it's certainly one of the leading Catholic universities in the United States. Of course, as a Jesuit, I'm prohibited from saying that it's the leading Catholic institution in the United States. Yeah. But many would say that. Uh-huh. And the thing is that I bet you get that question a lot. Like, what is the difference between Notre Dame and, you know, prescinding from, say, how they're ranked, what's the difference between Notre Dame and the University of Illinois, right, in terms mm-hmm. of, like, what do you... Is Western civilization somehow taught differently in one classroom than in the other, or is it more of an aesthetic that there's, you know, Notre Dame's led by a priest and there's a mm-hmm. mass there and the sacraments are available, or how does it play out?
Yeah, it's a great question, Matt. And let me just say the main areas I think of. First, the way we teach our students, the way we form our students, not only their minds, but their hearts and their spirits. To the extent, I'm not saying we're perfect here, but I'm saying we strive to give them a formation, the spiritual, that's moral, that's intellectual, that is identifiably different than that which is offered by a secular institution. So that's one thing. Second thing, I think that the kinds of conversations, the kinds of inquiries that go on here. Now, there's no difference, I don't believe, from our physics that's done here or psychology maybe, most of it, than University of Illinois. Okay, that's right. But I hope there are conversations that occur here that don't occur, or at least don't occur with the frequency and robustness that occur elsewhere, about God, about our ethical obligations to the poor of the world, about the purposes of civil society and our living together. We can draw on a rich theological, moral, intellectual tradition that enriches our conversation. We have, I won't mention his name, but one of our faculty came from a great institution in California. I won't mention its name, but it's a secular institution. But he said, look, I have more academic freedom here than I had there because I'm not afraid to talk about faith. There it's really something you shouldn't bring up in polite company. Here it's part of the fabric of the place. So there's a richer set of conversations. The third thing I hope and I believe that we and other Catholic universities give service to the church and the world that are distinctive. I mean, we have Alliance for Catholic Education that serves Catholic schools in this country. We have Institute for Church Life that helps with preaching, spirituality. We have a sacred music that I hope helps with liturgical music in this country, in the church. And I hope also that, you know, the call to serve the most vulnerable, I hope that there's a sort of not that other places don't do this, but I hope there's a special calling to serve those most in need in the world. And so those are just some broad areas that, again, it's not a checklist, but I hope we find those in prominence at Notre Dame and at other Catholic institutions that really define them and make them different kinds of places, a different that many things are just similar, but a different orientation to the work we do.
And from my experience in meeting Notre Dame graduates or current students, the elements of the school that you mentioned create a real true sense of community and loyalty in which the kinds of values and ideas that you're talking about can really flourish in a really powerful way because everyone I know that's gone to Notre Dame is really devoted to Notre Dame, yeah. But also to the values that they have learned there. So it doesn't just end with the school itself, but it turns them outward towards something larger than the school.
All right, Carrie, that's music to my ears, even though I know we can be a little obnoxious.
They really like Notre Dame.
I'm a product of a Jesuit high school, and so I've experienced it. And there is, I think faith allows us to create community at a deeper level than other organizations, and because we can touch on values that bind us in different ways. We can touch on elements of our life that are more powerful. And so I think, you know, if you ask me what the secret sauce is to kind of create that, it really is to come together around a sense of faith, around a sense of a bigger purpose in life. And, you know, Christ called to love one another. I mean, that is more challenging, a greater challenge we can give here than with all respect to secular institutions than they can offer their students.
I think you're right to point to the holistic experience that occurs at Catholic universities. I think, you know, circling back to these documents, both Land O'Lakes and Nex Corde Ecclesiae, sort of the onus on in both of those or at least the conversation surrounding them, is on theologians, specifically mm-hmm. within their academic roles. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for theologians. They're my mentors and my heroes in my time at university. But, you know, walking through the doors of Loyola Chicago at 18, I wasn't concerned about, and I wanted a Catholic school, and I was not concerned about whether my theology professor had his mandatum or not, or her mandatum or not. You know, I wanted to know what the campus ministry department was like. I wanted to know what the, you know, sacramental life of the university was. It was the service trips, those things that really made the difference to me.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. And obviously, you know, universities are intellectual places, but, you know, if we can combine the intellectual inquiry with a real commitment of heart. People's lives are changed by, encountering the world in ways, encountering the poor, encountering, knowing the joy of service. That is really critical, and that's part of the real transformation that that Catholic institutions can engender in students. You know, if I have one big worry about higher education in this country, it is its commodification, that it becomes, well, I pay you, you give me an education, and then I go earn a lot of money because I've got this degree. It becomes a commodity we buy. But Catholic institutions see education as a really transformative experience, a way to broaden yourself as a human being, to broaden your relationship with God and the world. And that's a special calling, and that's probably the main thing that's different between us and secular institutions, if we can sustain that. And there are always pressures that will sweep it to the side.
What is the thing that Notre Dame does in terms of its Catholic identity of which you're most proud or most pleased?
There are many things, Matt, but I really, Carrie's statement kind of rings with me. The impact we have on the world is through the graduates that we send out into the world. So if they're engaged in their parishes, if they're engaged in serving people in need, if they have a sense of a higher purpose in their lives, if we can do that, that's the biggest impact. And when I see that in one of our graduates, that makes me most proud.
Well, I wanted to point out to you, John, that since our founding in 1909, America Magazine is 7 for 9 for having presidents of Notre Dame in our pages.
Oh, I'm flattered to be in such company.
I had them go look it up. And and we hope the Fighting Irish have a similarly winning season.
we didn't have one last year, but we're hopeful about this season.
That's fantastic. Father John Jenkins, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, and keep up your great work in America. Thank you.
Thank you. The document is Land O'Lakes, and the article is called The Document That Changed Catholic Education Forever. It's by John Jenkins, who is the president of the University of Notre Dame and an all-around really good guy. Great to have him in our pages.
Yes, wonderful. And great to hear him chat. He's such an engaging guy.
He and I sometimes laugh about the fact people always tend to think that people think Notre Dame is a Jesuit university. I always say, no, it's the Holy Cross Fathers. And they were like, oh, like Holy Cross. I said, no, that's the Jesuits.
Well, now that you've put the Golden Dome on the cover of the magazine.
Yeah, I got a little bit of pushback. And I said, well, they look, there are a lot of, as you pointed out, Zach, there are a lot of SJs at the after those signatures on Land O'Lakes.
That's very true, yes.
Yeah. And, I think that that's a really interesting, this is just one part of an ongoing conversation of what it means to be a university and what it means specifically to be a Catholic university.
Yeah, and it's something people are really just constantly thinking and rethinking, and, entire departments of universities and colleges are departments of mission and ministry, right, devoted to this question and this topic. And I don't think we'll stop thinking about it anytime soon. I don't think there's one specific answer that we get to and then suddenly we've solved this problem.
No, and it's the question that every apostolate asks, right? How are we, particularly those sponsored by religious orders, how are we a part of the world and how are we a part of the church? What is the space we occupy at the intersection and how do we help direct traffic one or the other? Ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a Catholic magazine?
And as the world changes, the answer to that might change.
And I think institutions, like people, struggle with issues of identity, right? They're not exempt from it. So
I think that's exactly right. And we saw that actually in a story we didn't get to today called Nuns Welcome Activists to Pray in a New Chapel Blocking Gas Pipeline's Path.
Yeah, the Adorers of the Blood of Christ, which is a congregation in Columbia, Pennsylvania, have built a kind of outdoorsy chapel. It's more like a pergola with some benches.
But not much to look at.
Well, but I think it's sort of the point is that the nature itself is this chapel because they want to draw attention to the importance of the land, the importance of creation, in light of the fact that some developers are trying to put a pipeline through it.
Right. I mean, it you got to love the religious orders, right? I mean, sponsoring a place like the University of Notre Dame, sponsoring a thing like America Magazine, you know, sponsoring a chapel in the middle of a gas pipeline. Just
and
gotta
not
love
yet, not yet a gas
orders.
Pipeline. This is the point.
They've been offered.
Right. Not there yet.
Exactly.
This is a protest.
Well, you have been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. To find out more about all of the topics we've been talking about today, you can check us out at americamagazine.org, where you can read Father John's article, the cover story, in
an issue of America.
The July 24th, 2017 issue of America Magazine. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Zach Davis and Carrie Weber, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.